grain of rice. A grain of rice. Before you tip the scale. Just remember that, then.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo. You've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Good morning, folks, from Dalo's Irish Examiner podcast. And unfortunately for you, myself and Marco are still wearing Dalo shoes. He's still having a little bit of R&R. He's good and he's fine and he will be back to you very shortly, hopefully next week. So we send him best wishes again this week and he will be back on air very, very soon. So it's back to myself and Mr. Landers. And we are also joined this week by the great Ken Hogan. Ken, you must have had a massive week in terms of celebrations. It takes a good man to win a county, Marco, as we know, but it takes a great man to win two counties in the same day. So well done, first of all. And you might describe Sunday and the week that followed.
Yeah. I suppose we've forgotten about it now. This is a new week for trying to settle back down and get the constitution right again. But absolutely brilliant week. You know, it started very early. That's on the morning because the game was actually fixed. The Camogie final was fixed for 11:30.
So, and
we tried to change the date, but unfortunately, it just didn't concur with the arrangements for the Camogie board. So thankfully, my Carkey Borough sportingly agreed to bring it forward to 10:30. And that was just with the hope that I'd be at least able to warm them up because I had been with the girls the whole year. And it wasn't all a bed of roses either, lads, because we had a tough year. We lost Cuiva Kennedy and Kate O'Mara, who went teaching in Dubai, and then we lost Grania Hawk to a cruciate ligament injury. So from our point of view, it was a struggle the whole year. We had four mothers playing, would you believe it? Absolutely fantastic women altogether. Never missed a training session. Kept the show on the road because at one stage we thought we wouldn't be actually able to field in the championship. So to come along and just throw caution to the wind, and we've seen that in the last 24 hours as well, and to win that championship after losing three in a row, lads. It was just an absolutely fantastic feeling. I'd intended leaving with 10 minutes to go, quarter an hour to go, but there was no going, lads, because it was squeaky bum time. It went down to the bitter end, and we prevailed by that sweet one-point win.
Fantastic. And for the listeners who are probably not aware, that was with your own club, Lara, in the Junior B Camogie final yesterday week, basically. So that was your early start to the day on last Sunday week. And after that, Ken?
Michael, who would be a great Lara man and uncle of John McIntyre's, actually, he came with me back to Bor. He travelled with me to the Camogie game. His grandniece, Clodagh McIntyre, was our captain of Ireland's for his family fame now. And we travelled back to Bor. And met Andy Smith, my trainer, and Joe and my wife. And I just managed to keep the car between the ditches heading to Tullamore because I was in an absolute high, obviously, after winning the Camogie. But I can tell you, I was soon brought down to earth by my former alma mater, Cool Derry, because they hit us with absolutely everything. And we were certainly on the ropes for a long periods in that game.
Yeah, brilliant. Obviously, two defences must have been on top, Ken, because following the game and what's the score, and the scores were hard to come by, and you finally get the goal later on. So it must have been just magic in the finish.
Yeah, pretty similar to the yesterday's county final, the fact that backs tended to dominate, particularly in the second half. We had an awful amount of wides, 16 wides, and like people talking, and it's an overused cliche, I suppose, about the strength of your team is your bench, but we emptied the bench. We had to empty the bench because obviously players, we carried a few injuries into the game, and we just threw caution to the wind. Our substitutes played a major role in the game. They got involved in a big way in the game. Paul Quirk got a magnificent pint, and from our perspective, I suppose we were hoping to get that draw to try and stay in the championship or go to extra time, but Dermot Short, who was an outstanding wing back for us, but Shorty actually tore 2 points down. He won possession at the end with almost time up, and he hit the ball in low, and Sean Dolan and Stephen Quirk and the lads and Kieran Flannery, it was on the line for, it seemed like ages in the square, but it popped up, and Stephen hit it on the volley. No better man to finish with style. So the sweetest of victories for us, an awful way for Cool Derry to be beaten. Such a great club side. But Kildare had, on the flip side, Kildare had done that to St. Rhinus in 2015. So the tables were totally turned in 2021. And I suppose it was just sweet to win that three in a row with a group of players that are hugely committed and take their hurling very seriously.
Yeah, three in a row, no mean achievement. And Ken, I'm not sure, I didn't see anything since, but you've won two counties in the same year, right, which is obviously because of COVID, which is a phenomenal achievement. But Mark, I'm not sure if there's any historians out there who could tell us, has there anybody who's won two counties in the same day?
I can't think of two counties. I can think of two All-Irelands in a fortnight, all right, in 1990.
Yeah, two in the same day is just a phenomenal achievement. So, unbelievable, Ken. Yeah. So,
to go back to the girls, they like to have last three county finals in a row, and that's something that's becoming prevalent now. Clyne last three seniors in Cork, the Glen have last three seniors, Ballincollig last three seniors back in the 40s. And there'll be a bit of encouragement there for the Glen boys to know that if they keep going. And over the weekend, TJ and Cork Castlelines last their second county final in a row at intermediate level, and Fabra Neils last their second senior A final in a row the week before. So it's great to see them being in the final and getting to the final and showing that they're a quality team, because look, you only get to a final and keep getting back to the final unless you're good enough. But like the message is really, you have to keep going, don't you? You don't give up. Like that medal, that cup is at the end of the line. You just don't give up.
Yeah, no, we had a girl that came into the parish. She's married into the parish, Carolyn O'Brien, and she's one of the mothers I was speaking about. But she actually kept the club together when all things were going falling asunder, really. And she was the person that gelled the whole thing together. And only for that, I genuinely feel that we wouldn't have had a team to field in the last year or two.
Right. Yeah. That's brilliant, isn't it? That's fantastic, Ken. I know the last 10 minutes, exactly when the game is in the melting pot and you have your plans made, that you're going with 10 minutes to go, you just can't go. So you can't.
No, you can't go. And I think in fairness to St. Rhinus and the lads, they understood that totally. Like Ewan and Martin was down in Tullamore. We have a warm-up pitch there, and Ewan had everything up and running for Andy and myself when we got there. So it was just like clockwork. And it was with the agreement of a lot of genuine people. And I must say, like, that's the beauty of the GA. Everybody understands that when you're in the trenches, yeah, you can't run away. You can't turn your back on it. You've got to stay there on your hands and knees and crawl over the line if you can.
Ken, you were safe enough anyway with the guard there, Scott, I suppose, just in case anything happened on the way.
Oh, the high roads and by roads of Borders of Cain, we went down through the country, you know, to his guests like, you know, St. Rhinus will be celebrating in Banagher. And funny enough, we have one pub in Lorra there in Mahers, and we have one in Rathcabin, but the girls were in Brian Whelan's on the Monday. into Brian, and they had actually come in. They all came into Brian's, and they had come in for the last 2 years as well. And Brian said, "Ah, girls, you didn't lose again." And then one of the girls had the cup behind her back, and she just pulled it out. And Brian actually counter with delight. Never mind anybody else, you know.
Brilliant. So
you got a chance to catch up on the celebrations during the week, so Ken, yeah, good week. And in general, Ken, the standard of camogie round the country is rising all the time, like we've seen with some of the senior finals there over the last couple of years. And even last night, Mark, there's breaking news that...
Unbelievable.
Mr. Davey is heading your way.
Yeah, well, this one seems to be confirmed now, TJ, because...
Confirmed, okay.
I think he might have learned a little bit from the Galway game or Galway position that unless it's announced by the county board, you don't have it like it. So, Jesus, he's a big pickup now for the Cork Camogie lads and Tomás Toomey, who played with Douglas. I would have played with him back with Cork Juniors and Cork Intermediates a long time ago. Tomás, a fine man. He was selector with Paddy Murray as well. So there's a lot of continuity with the Camogie team, but they brought in an outside coach and none other than Davy Fitzgerald. So that's big news for, I suppose, Cork Camogie. And I'd say the girls will be looking forward to dealing with him and working with him. And Davy has worked with Camogie teams both at club and county in the past as well. So I think he became available. So no, that wouldn't stop him going training another couple of other teams, I presume, as well. Like, but you know, I think it seems to be confirmed now that he is part of the backroom staff for the Camogie team for 2022. Big news.
Yes, good for the game and the profit. We keep our eyes, but as I said, definitely has been.
Is it a job interview for the senior job next year, TJ? Is it?
Would you take him, Mac?
I don't know. I couldn't see it happening myself personally.
Okay.
I think, to be fair to Cork County Board, they have been trying to do a lot of succession planning, I suppose, is what I would say. And, you know, Pat Ryan, the under-20s, he stepped aside. Now he won two All-Irelands. Noel Furlong won the minor All-Ireland, has stepped in with Kieran Kingston at senior level. And Paddy Murray, who was with the under-16s, stroke 15s prior to that in Rebel Oak, has stepped into the minors. So I think the view there is they're trying to find a manager or try to build up a pool of managers going forward. So obviously, Pat Ryan would be the hot favourite, I would suspect, to take over from Kieran Kingston if he wanted it. The job would be his. If not, then I'd say Noel Furlong, you know, depending obviously how Kieran Kingston gets on this year. But Kieran, as was in the past, you know, when some success has come his way, he has seemed to step aside. After winning the Munster final a number of years ago, he stepped aside. Even though a lot of people would have felt on the ground that he had good work done and he probably should have continued on. And John Myler stepped in for 2 years then, and Kieran has come back. So I don't know. There just needs to be continuity, I suppose, TJ, is the big thing. And I think it's good to see Noel Furlong stepping up. And I don't know what that means in terms of Noel's backroom staff. How many fellas is he going to bring with him? Because I'm sure I saw pictures of their backroom staff at the minors, and there was anything from 12 to 15 people involved. And I would be surprised if a number of those fellas won't be involved in the senior setup this year. So I think we have to wait and see what pans out. But as for Davy Fitch taking over in Cork,
watch this space. Yeah, well, to be fair to Kieran Kingston, I suppose, before we say the job is available in next year, he had a very successful 2021 getting to an Ireland final. So maybe if he goes one better, he might be there for another while yet.
Absolutely. Well, look, if he's got Ireland, TJ, he'll be guaranteed. Like, it has been tradition in Cork that any outgoing winning manager is always given the first choice. It's always left to him that if he wants to continue on, he's given that option to do that. So yeah, I don't think that'll change.
And Marcus, sticking with all things Cork, just for a minute before we move on to some of the main events, you were in the presence of one of the great Cork people on Friday. You might just touch on that for a sec.
I was lucky enough to come across a couple of pair of tickets to go to see Roy Keane on Friday in Kerry. And I must thank Peter Nolan, Financial Services in Kerry, for inviting me, and Owen Kelleher, his colleague, who was the man who organised it. And in typical cute Kerry form, right, your man says to me, be down for half two. So being the good Cork man, and I brought a couple of buddies with me, Patrick Mulcahy and Conor McNamara as well, to see him. We arrived at half two and there was about 25 people there, to find out that I text Peter. I said, Peter, I said, we're here. We'll be along soon. I've been around 4 o'clock, he said. So I said, Jesus, what's the story here? So he arrived at four. We weren't sat down till five, and Keane didn't arrive till six. So we were well sorted from half past 2 to 6 o'clock to the time Keane arrived.
You were ready for him. Yeah. And I see there is good money, but Keane was obviously box office as usual. Yeah.
Ah, he was just unbelievable. Now, they raised, so to Fort Kerry Hospice, a fantastic occasion and fantastic cause as well, raised €72,000. And Keane's last jersey was auctioned as well, the one that he wore in the Liam Miller tribute, and that was sold for €12,000. And it was gas, the bidding started at 515, and away up we went. And some people thought he had it for $8,000, going once, going twice, and Keane stick up his hand, $8,500, so he went to go to $9,000. Then it was going twice again, and Keane stuck up his hand again to $9,500, so it went to $10,000, then there was $11,000, and then there was another bid of $12,000, so, which was great. So that, I think that would go to the charity as well. But he was box office, he was brilliant. And, you know, I must say, the couple of takeaways from it was, first and foremost, the elite player, and it is all about winning. He said, there were the two things that I took away from it, that elite players want a different standard of coaching and expectation, and it's only all about winning. He says, don't make any mistake about that. He says, you know, the fellas will tell you, go enjoy yourself. And look, we all had that speech as well, like, but the major enjoyment in anything is winning. And he just, for him, all his life, it was about winning. No matter what it was always about winning for him. So, but he was brilliant. The crowd loved him. He, Matt Cooper interviewed him, asked him a couple of the hard questions, you know, the normal stuff, the Alex Ferguson era, the Saipan, you know, his younger days and stuff like that. He wouldn't have been the brightest of fellas, but he basically met his wife, Teresa, settled down, and then realised that he was a professional footballer, I suppose, and that he had a young family to take care of, and that he was probably ended up being the key person in United for a good few years. And I'd say he would have left it known that he was quite capable of playing on for at least two or three more years in United, but not in the role that he fulfilled in his probably best years, which was box-to-box football. His role was ultimately as a sitting midfielder, and he said he had definitely another two or three years in him, but just that himself and Alex Ferguson just got to a point where they just couldn't probably deal with each other or get on with each other anymore. And he was really, I suppose, really disappointed with how things did end up with United and how he finished out with United. But I was enthralled by him, and I was delighted. And I've never met the man before in my life, even though he's a Cork man, but he passed right in front of me, and it was a great thrill, I must say. And yeah, I've no doubt if he pulled on the shots again, he's so fit, he could continue to play.
Well, I have to say, be a fan, even on Sky Sports, yeah. Mac, he's very interesting to listen to. He's on the money every time. And even yesterday, like, you know, and I suppose United has been in the news so much at the moment, like he seems to get it right. I'm just wondering, are we going to see him, did he say, back as a manager again?
Well, he made it known that he is in the market to be a manager. He did also say that, you know, he thought he did a very good job with Sunderland. He tried his best with Ipswich. You know, I suppose the view was he was able to, I suppose, get Sunderland promoted with an average bunch of players. Ipswich were the same. He said, I've never been given or afforded the opportunity to play with really top-class players. And that's really what he was itching at, that if you're a Chelsea, Liverpool, Man City, Man United, maybe Man United, do you know what I mean? That if you had top-class players, how would they react to him? Well, he certainly has an itch to get back at it at the top level.
How would he be in the current United dressing room, Ken? I wonder, like, I know he said a lot of harsh stuff about some of them, like, but his philosophy is very much built on hard work and, like, a kind of, as you said there, a winning ethic all the time, isn't it?
You're talking to a Man U diehard here, actually.
Yeah,
I remember 73 when United were relegated. I remember Dennis Law back heeling the goal to be relegated. So that's how far back I can go, lads.
Okay.
And right. It's funny that Mark said about him maturing as a player and maturing as a person. Also, I think as a manager, and we're talking about management here, you also mature as a manager. And you see the guy that's coming in there now, coming into United, he's 63 years of age. I mean, Roy was born in 71, was he? I think, yes, he turned 50. Yeah, he's born in 71. So, like, Roy is maturing all the time. He's smart, right? He's streetwise, he's a winner. But I think that maturity you need as a manager, I think the best 10 years, you see the shape he's in, Mark. He's in absolutely outstanding shape.
Phenomenal.
He's super fit. He's a non-drinker now. He lives a really good life. So from that point of view, I think he will mature as a manager as well. And I think he just needs that opportunity. I mean, obviously, Ollie went in there, you know, a nice guy. And as Colm O'Rourke is famous, you know, nice guys finished last. You're talking about winning the whole time. Colm O'Rourke's famous saying was nice guys finished last when Meath were at their toughest in the late 80s, early 90s. So from that perspective, Keane would always be a winner. And I actually admire the loyalty to have. You know, it's a professional game and they're on huge money, but they have savage loyalty to each other as comrades and teammates. And they didn't let Solskjaer down. And people said that was blind loyalty. But I feel that you're right, Mark. I think he's a lot to contribute in the managerial field. And it's only wiser and smarter he will get. You know,
But you know, like, the funny thing is that, you know, the whole room, I would have to say, was delirious with him. I will say that now. And he had the place captivated for the time that he spoke. Like, one of the things that Matt Cooper asked him, he asked him about Stephen Kenny. He said, how do you think Stephen Kenny is getting on, and what would your summing up of him be? And a straight one, I said, he felt as a manager that you'd need to win games to be assessed. So he was just, the whole place was breaking down with him, like, you know. But like overall, the big thing from a Kerry Hospice point of view, to get the likes of Roy Keane in there, Matt Cooper, Eamon Fitzmaurice was there, Mick Galway was there, Seamus Moynihan was there. You know, TJ, unfortunately, you weren't able to make it. No. I had a spot at the table.
And Ken,
I've been fighting a lone battle myself here with these, Liverpool and Spurs supporter. If I knew you were a diehard Man U, I'd have rang you. I could tell you, I would have got you in.
Yeah, I'd have jogged. I'd have actually jogged down.
There you go. Excellent stuff. Well done to Kerry Hospice also there. So I suppose moving on, Ken, to the magic of yesterday and all things Loughmore. I suppose incredible firsts, incredible to do the double, and just everything that's been said and wrote about him over the last maybe number of years, I suppose, since they did the double in 2013, and then last year to lose the two county finals. And they seem to have everybody's goodwill and everybody kind of wanted them to win. I'm not sure what inside tip the feeling would have been, Ken, but certainly I think the general public wanted them to win yesterday. And that was no disrespect to Turles whatsoever. It's just, I suppose, from losing last year. But I suppose what a piece of entertainment yesterday, and what a way to win the double. Just incredible.
Yeah, and like this was achieved before in 2013. And when you think of the Brian McGraths and these fellas, these young whippersnappers, they weren't involved then. As a parish, like, it's their lifeblood. It's as simple as that. We cannot overestimate what they did yesterday. It was absolutely unbelievable. And the fight, you just have to remember, lads, the ironic thing about it, they lost both county finals last year by a point in heartbreaking circumstances. And Kildangan, you know, when Loughmore look back on it now, Castellani, with Kildangan and also with Clonmel Commercials, right? I think Kildangan, you know, were due their county final and deserved their day in the sun, no more than Clonmel Commercials, who are former Munster club football champions. So, I mean, from that perspective, lads, you see, you know, the achievement that Loughmore, from their point of view, it's unbelievable to think like that they're on the 17th Sunday in a row, and they're hits in football, as you well know. And you in your early 20s, you're able to take those belts, lads. You know yourselves, you hop up and you go back out. But now you have a team that are very mature team, but are into their 30s, a lot of those players. And Evan Sweeney, who had a huge influence in the game yesterday, changed the game totally. You know, I had him as a young fella with tape. He came in, he was tigerish, he was fighting for the ball, his spirit, he was driving, like, he's knee-high to a grasshopper, lads, Evan. He's 30, late 30s now, is it? But he fired into every Turles man, he hit him with everything he had, he scored points, he just lifted the whole team, and it had a huge effect on the whole outcome of the game. So I think, you know, to win against Clonmel Commercials, who were a top-class football team, but come out yesterday and produce the display they did, again, with a huge amount of wides. Their tally of wides was absolutely huge. I think totaling 20, was it, or almost 20. So from that perspective, to win in those circumstances, for John Maher to fail a fitness test for the county football final and Brian McGrath, yet John Maher came back in yesterday, took the Man of the Match award, took the John McGrath Perpetual Man of the Match award off John, because he was absolutely sensational. And he's really the heartbeat of this team, John Maher. And to epitomise John Maher, lads, he's gone through hell on earth, you know, in different circumstances with hurling and the injuries he's received. But a Turles player went down with cramp right on time up. And John, he actually ran back and caught the player's leg and tried to alleviate the problem. That's the sporting man that John Maher is. And we talk about the McGrath dynasty, you know, absolutely unbelievable. And we have to mention Camogie as well. Drum won the Camogie yesterday. And we had McGraths involved in that. I think there was 17 McGraths over the course of the last 7 days. 17 McGraths have won county medals. What an achievement. But super stuff yesterday, enthralling to the end. But hard to believe. You know, even though everybody was thrilled for Loughmore Castellani, people are nearly hoping to go to extra time, because it was box office stuff. You know, you wanted it to go on and go on. It was nearly so heart-wrenching in a sense that when the final whistle is blown, is this all over? Sure, this was manna from heaven, you know.
Yeah, and in fairness, it probably was a slow start, and even watching the game in the first half, certainly for me, I thought a lot more were nearly pucking this away because they missed a good few chances in the first half. They definitely, like, they were 9-6 down at halftime. They had 12 wides in the first half, but some of those were kind of poor wides by their own standards. You were kind of thinking, was maybe the effect of the 16 or 17 weeks Ken having a bit of an effect in the first half? And then Turles didn't kick on and didn't put him away, and there's a question mark there. Like, I thought that there was an opportunity there for Turles to kick on when it wasn't working for a lot more, but they hung in there and hung in there. And then the second half, it was just unbelievable stuff from there. And I'm not sure if you got to see it, Mark, on TV. Did you? The
atmosphere, I did, actually, TJ. I did. I saw it. Again, like you, I thought the first half, it struggled for momentum, right? Like, the two halves were totally contrasting halves because it was slow and cumbersome, I would have thought, the first half with a lot of wides. But my God, in the second half, it was enthralling stuff. The last 15 minutes in particular, I have to say, once the goal went in for Sarsfields to bring it level or bring it to within a point, the whole game took on a new dynamic. And I'd have to say the referee contributed handsomely to the game because the fellas were flying into everything and he left it flow. He stood back. He left the players at it, which is always a great sign of a referee, that the referee is actually part of the tempo of the game. And he had a huge part to play in it. I must say, Ken, I did see the John Maher thing at the end of this, and I actually waited to see the camera, because the first camera didn't show whether it was a lot more or a Turles Sarsfields player was actually down the ground, the way the camera angle was. But then as the thing rolled on, the medics came in from Turles Sarsfields, and you knew it was Turles Sarsfields. Like, so for a fella to do that with everything on the line, that shows you the quality man that he is. I thought Brian McGrath was outstanding from the get-go now. From the word go, I thought he was outstanding. He had a big part to play in the first half now when Sarsfields were well on top, I thought. And I would say this much, the Loughmore goalkeeper, if they got bait, I said as much, a size 9, a size 10, a size 11, you'd have been getting in the dressing room on the way home, like, you know. Why he took the shot free here, man, I'll never know. But anyway, they bailed him out. But Jesus, does, you know, you talk about goalkeepers, Ken, I don't know. That wasn't in the playlist.
Yeah, and Aidan McGrath's a gas man. He was on the football team, obviously. And Aidan again, I would have had him at 121. What a top player. But Loughmore had a perennial problem there with goalkeepers. And David Kennedy, at 44 years of age, stepped into the breach last year to help him out. And then Aidan got injured early on. Now, some of the Loughmore lads will tell you he wasn't injured at all, that he just wanted a handy number. But he went back into goals. He's a savage pair of hands. He scored a wonderful pint in the first game. But Aidan obviously is his first year. And Aidan, I think, will, whether he likes it or not now, it's a parish thing in Loughmore, Castellani. So Aidan is going to be in goals for the next 20 years. He's about 30 now, so I'd say he'd be there if he's about 50, because it's your duty to play on. David Kennedy was there yesterday at 46 years of age. Do you know what I mean? As a sub. So the actual team photograph afterwards, lads, was actually the parish photograph. The whole parish was there with Noel with the cup. But I think Noel, tactically, they were very smart as well, Loughmore Castellani, to put Noel in full forward and Paddy. And Paddy, obviously, they have grown up together, won minor, 21, senior All-Irelands together. But Paddy would have huge respect for Noel. There was a big, huge respect there. And Paddy wasn't, he was minding the house. He said, I better mind the house here, because he knew with Noel that if Noel got in, it would be curtains. So from that point of view, I think it was a very smart move. It quelled Paddy's dominance, and Paddy fought to the very end. I mean, the Mahers were colossus again for Turles Sarsfields. Absolutely unbelievable. Paddy McCormack in the goals. What a servant. Made a couple of great saves. Unlucky with the great save, and was tapped back into it by Lee McGrath. But I think overall, Loughmore's tenacity, like, talk about wearing a team down. They just wore Turles Sarsfields down for a finish. And their hunger to win, their absolute ravenous hunger to win. And you mentioned Kieran McCormack. We had Darragh Stakelam scoring an unbelievable goal in his 18th year for Turles Sarsfields. But then you had Kieran McCormack coming on. a school boy in Templemore CBS or Ladies Templemore, 18 years of age as well. What a point from him, you know, at the date to show that calmness under pressure. Shawnee Butler coming in for Turles Sarsfields. A lot of guys would say Shawnee Butler has got the rough end of the stick in Turles Sarsfields. He made a huge difference for Turles Sarsfields when he came in. Super points. But I think Loughmore, they tactically, they had everything right. And I suppose that's from that involvement in football and hurling, the smartness of it all to do the right thing at the right time.
Yeah, because they seem to be struggling in the first half with Dennis Maher fielding in terms of the ball he was winning in the air and the Pa Burke beside him. That seemed to be working really well for Turles, but they didn't get any real return off it then as much in the second half. Loughmore maybe got the grips of the ball out the field, Ken, but certainly, as you said, ground them down and the work rate and the energy all around the field. And let's talk about this guy in the middle of the field, Mark, this Kieran Connolly.
Was there three of the four midfielders were all Kittogues, were there?
Without a doubt, Mikey Cahill was the only one not. Stephen Cahill, very good for Turles Sarsfields. Tomás Maher, Mossy as they call him, with a heavy bandage. Yeah. You know, some of the Loughmore lads were carrying heavy bandages, but also Conor Stakelam, unfortunately, didn't line out for Turles Sarsfields. He was a huge loss to them because Conor Stakelam is a very mobile, athletic, fast player that caused John Maher a few problems in the first game. Yeah. So there was a lot of Kittogues playing.
They were brilliant. They were brilliant, everyone. Yeah, and the other thing I thought, Ken, is that some of the striking for points off their left-hand side, which would probably be a weaker side for a Kittogue. Most Kittogues like striking off the right-hand side. I thought some of the point scoring from the Kittogues were brilliant yesterday.
Yeah, and Kieran Connolly was very ballsy because he had missed a chance in the first half, TJ. He ran straight to the middle, a simple point off his right, missed a point in the second half. I could see him shaking his head. I was just above the Loughmore bench. But then he came through in the second half and it took a lot of courage to go for the pint he got. But it actually lifted the roof off the stand. He was the go-to man. We talk about the John Mahers. But Kieran Connolly, between the lines, between the backs and the forwards, the link-up play. And he's an under-20 All-Ireland. And he's definitely someone that Colin Bonner will be looking at. His mobility, he runs freely. But his involvement in the game is critical. He has that bit of courage, that bit of drive and that bit of tenacity to work between the 45s. And he played an outstanding part yesterday.
Yeah, given the way the middle third has gone in games, he definitely looked like a player from the outside. You'd say, we'll see more of this guy somewhere along the way. A super, super game. And I suppose the other couple of things I was going to touch on, Ken, was Mick Dempsey. Everybody knows Mick Dempsey of Brian Cody and Kilkenny fame, and obviously his involvement there. How key was he, given that Mick is football and hurling and maybe equal and bringing both those teams to county finals and winning must have been crucial?
Hugely crucial. And Loughmore are a real traditional family club. They have never had too many outside trainers. I'm sure, a big decision on Frankie's part to bring in somebody from the outside to advise them. I did observe on both games when I was in the stand that Mick went up with Maureen Connolly. They went up. Remember, they had a female selector as well, a great woman, Eddie Connolly's mother. God rest him. And they were up in the middle of the stand observing what was going on. And I think the biggest asset for Loughmore, from Mick's point of view, obviously Mick's a born winner anyway, from his involvement with KK and Kilkenny and that. But I think to observe from a distance, and just speaking to David Kennedy, he told me that that's essentially what he was doing in training, because Murta Brennan, an absolutely fabulous trainer. You have Frankie there, Eamon Sweeney, you know, great coaches. But I think Mick was brought in as an observer, and he'd come in, and when he spoke, everybody listened. And it was the same with the water breaks, lads. You might have seen that.
Yeah.
Because he came down, he was a cool head, but he was able to observe. And the moves that were made, I'm just thinking about that myself. I think Mick would have had a major role in probably some of those tactical moves. And that quiet word, that essential word, that new voice, I think brought inspiration to this team. Plus the fact, of course, that he was a dual man himself. His football knowledge is top class as an intercounty footballer himself, and then his involvement as a hurling coach with Brian Cody.
Yeah, I'd say even the management from week to week, Ken, like with John Maher and Brian McGrath the week before, let's say not starting and just maybe being around the setup and being able to advise there, huge, I would imagine, in the success for both. But and the McGraths, Ken, Michael Dowd was telling me there's five families of the McGraths, is that correct?
Like, I think there was either eight or nine. Yeah,
okay.
there's five McGraths, you know. I always slag Pat McGrath's sister is Catherine Short, and you know the Shorts, they played with Upper Church Drum Band, and Michelle played, she's won All Ireland's Camogie, she's married to James Woodlock. Imagine the pedigree there.
Okay.
She's married to James Woodlock. No, she'd won All Ireland Camogie titles. She's a first cousin of the McGraths, and they won with obviously with drum, and congratulations to them. But the most amazing thing about the McGraths is they're first cousins, brothers, sisters, or second cousins. And then you have Ned Ryan. You hurled against Ned Ryan yourselves back. He played in the 90s, just before you came into the scene, TJ and Mark. And then you have the Hennessys. Joey Hennessy was full back. His mother is Mary McGrath. So there's a huge, the Evanstons, of course, all first cousins. So it's not just the McGrath entourage. It's the Hennessys, the Evanstons. And I'm probably leaving out the Ryans. I'm probably leaving out people here as well into the bargain, but it's a huge catchment area. And you know, I can't understand. I always like David Kennedy, you know, that he actually married a woman outside the parish. How did he get away with that? So, from that point of view, I've got to think of the Campions as well. The Campions were involved with Drum Camogie, they play with Drum hurling team, actually, outstanding hurlers as well. So, what a dynasty of a family. And the McGraths, you know, people that football goal. Aidan or Brian McGrath to Liam McGrath to Noah McGrath to John McGrath was absolutely unbelievable to see, and then the goal is scored. So they're just a wonderful family and so down to earth, you know, humble people. You know, God rest their father and mother, Mick McGrath, you know, and his wife. What great people, and they just have lived for sport, lived for the game, and I'm sure they're looking down on the parish today with such happy memories, you know. So, I mean, from that point of view, they've done their families and their parishes proud. But it is some dynasty there.
There's a family tree project for somebody out there in with kind of a link to the McGraths that would make interesting reading. But again, like, we probably have seen this, Mark, up and down the country. I commented it last week about, was it the Mellericks and the Walshes, especially in the final in Cork. And just always a link between maybe a family and a club that's been successful that are driving it behind. But yeah, really, really well done to the McGraths.
Yeah, it's just brilliant. Like, and certainly when you have a big family like that and they're totally committed to the game, it does spread out then amongst the cousins as well. Like, and then I have no doubt it leads to plenty of rivalry down in the JA field when they're training and stuff like that, because some of the greatest skills, so I got a training work from my own brothers when I was training, like, you know, so they'd be lining you up from a long ways out.
That's for sure.
Turners will be disappointed as well. Ken, I suppose, just touching them. Like, they've had, like, obviously a very good year, and they've contributed to two really memorable games on the TV. And, you know, at times, well, maybe not so much yesterday in the second half, but definitely the first day, I thought the game was there for them to close out, and they didn't do it. So there's a kind of one or two question marks about them, is there?
Yeah, but to be fair, yeah, there is question marks, I suppose, in a sense. But to be fair, they won the mid-championship. They got to the county final. Mark Dowling came in. Mark would be actually a very good friend of mine and a very sound Kilkenny man as well. And Mark came in from Dixborough. He brought Liam Phelan with him. And obviously Brendan Carroll and Eamon Walsh, very astute men. I mean, Turles put some effort into this, you know. Mark brought in a physicality that Turles previously hadn't got. Now, you take the great Turles teams, right, of, you know, last 6-7 years. And obviously, they waned a bit. They went over the top. And they lost some of their top players, obviously, Larry and all those lads through retirement and things like that. But in fairness to Mark, he's come with a new team. Yesterday, I suppose, when the stakes were physical, he went with a young team. When the stakes were physical and when it came down to brass tacks, just the hunger and the drive of Loughmore Castellani, I don't know, has any club the answer to that? You mentioned TJ. The first half, like, standard-wise, wasn't up to the standard we'd expect for a county final. The second half surpassed everything we expected. So, from Mark's point of view, I would sincerely hope, and I'm sure the players will hope, that he will stay in situ, because he's done a tremendous job, a magnificent job. And he also, the Dara Stakelands of this world, the Shawnee Butlers, all the young fellas are coming in, Joseph Ryan's, young Corbett, and they're coming into it to a system that they previously weren't used to. So as we stated before in this program, the huge successes Duras Oak have, that will transfer itself eventually into senior superiority again. So we think of fate, lads. I think this was destined for Loughmore Castellani at the end of the day. And Loughmore will be so disappointed, or Turtle Stars will be disappointed today, but they have to take solace from the fact, well, Loughmore Castellani were in the very same position last year.
Yeah, fair enough. And you're right. Sometimes your name is on it. And look, in fairness to Turles, they contributed to two brilliant games, great viewing, and, you know, great club, I suppose, games that have been kind of on our TV screens over the last number of weeks.
We have to talk, TJ, about the club situation now in football and hurling has surpassed all our expectations. And I'm not exaggerating there or trying to be an Andy Gray to blow up everything, but I think it has surpassed all our expectations in every county in this country, in the fact that the club scene, the split season, we see the success of it now, and we also see the passion and the rivalries and the love of the game that the people have. People just want to see games and see matches. And, you know, for TG4 and RTE and all the teams, you know, to promote in the way they've done in the last few weeks, and Dalo's podcast and all the rest of the all other podcasts, it has brought club hurling and football, Camogie ladies football, to the forefront. And I think that is magnificent, that at last the club scene is getting some recognition.
And to be fair, Ken, all around the country to the clubs, right, especially those clubs in contention, they've upped the ante as well. Like, the preparation is better, the quality and view is better. And, like, to me, I think there's huge scope for improvement for the club over the coming years. And the split season now next year will be the first kind of time that we get to see maybe inter-county teams out of the championship in May. Clubs have a huge amount of time to get their house in order. So it has the potential for me to get better. One other point we need to discuss before we move on, and this is an item discussed up and down the country, in clubs, in pubs, in houses, and that is the dual player and the dual club. There are plenty of people with ideas, maybe even myself included, I'll be critical here, is to say that it's difficult to play or commit to both in the modern era. And we have plenty kind of maybe intricacies from time to time ourselves, but a lot more are able to do it. Is that Ken down to, or Mark, down to the same management team, or maybe the same group of players, or is it a better crossover? But they certainly have put the myth of that it can't be done to bed by winning both counties again.
I would say that Loughmore are possibly the exception to the rule, TJ. Now, they're also backed by the fact that they're a small club and they have a small pool of players, I would say. So I probably grew up in a club that was a hurling-dominated club and slightly anti-football at times, I suppose. Depending on who was the manager of the football team, you might throw in your lot when you were playing with Cork and stuff like that. But there was certainly no encouragement to play football at any... We played junior football when we were junior up to 95. But kind of when we went intermediate and senior, the footballs were thrown to the side, I'd have to say. Like, certainly it has been a bone of contention in a lot of clubs in Cork. Douglas, Ballincollig, the Bears, Kanturk, Ballinhassig were in the junior football final and they were in the intermediate hurling semi-final this year. Look, it's not ideal, I would say, TJ. And if you have managements pulling against each other, the players get caught in the middle, and that's where the biggest problem is. And there's no doubt if the players are happy and there's no hassle with the players. The player doesn't want to be getting a phone call from the hurling manager or the football manager to do one or the other. The player just want to go out and play. And whether that's hurling or that's football, most ordinary club fellas don't really care. They're playing for the jersey, they're playing for the parish. It's the management teams make it awkward, I think, because they want their piece of flesh and they want to be seen to be doing the best they can for their team. So it's not easy. What Loughmore have done is next to impossible, but they have done the impossible, I would say. If anybody told you, I think, am I right in saying, Ken, is it 18 weeks in a row they've played championship? So,
17, they'll have 19. The big beauty there, Mark, is that they have the same management team. It is a small parish with a small community with the same management team, and the beauty of Mick Dempsey coming in, a hurling man, a football man. So, I mean, There is no discrimination there in any sense. I feel Tom McClinchy there, and you know Tom, he trained, managed Tipperary footballers and managed Waterford footballers, yep. A huge interest in Gaelic games. And he's had this argument with me several times. He feels that it can survive in clubs. In actual fact, St. Rhinus are a senior B club in football. And I would have 6 or 7 lads playing. And Gary O'Connor, who would be Joey's brother, he is the manager there and has done a wonderful job with St. Rhinus football. So it can be done with the cooperation of everybody. If you want to be an awkward son of a gun, you can be as awkward as you absolutely like. Does it interfere in the absolute perfection of coaching and training teams? It interferes with the apple cart in some way or another. But in actual fact, the amazing part about it is you have happier players when they're allowed to play the codes they love to play, particularly at club level. And like we all grew up, lads, watching the Jimmy Barry Murphys, you know, the fantastic players, Conall Keeney of this era, the guys, you know, they, obviously in Dublin, they have lost out on the Kilkennys and Dermot Connollys and Conor Callaghan, who we've mentioned this show before. It's an awful pity, particularly in the city of Dublin, when they can actually facilitate that. So from everybody's perspective, I think the dual player should be facilitated. They're human beings. They're players, Mark, as you said. They shouldn't be torn between two lovers. Do you know what I mean? They should be allowed to express themselves on the pitches in both codes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think Ken, like what you said there, with the outside managers coming in, influencing players, it can get tricky, and they want their pound of flesh, or they want the players available to them and 2 weeks and 3 weeks out, and they want to play their challenge game. And like it is a difficult one, and I suppose there's probably plenty of clubs there where, let's say, players would play hurling. Let's say, in our case, play hurling with Gary Splann, and our guys would play football with Galbally, and there's plenty of those type of scenarios around the country which cause difficulties. Maybe a crossover in the management teams could help. It might be, like in the case of Loughmore, where they have the same management team, that may not be possible, but certainly a crossover would definitely help and make life easier for the players. But it's an argument that's going to rumble on, and Loughmore is going to keep coming up as the solution. Well, if they can do it, why can't we do it?
And Sloughneil, of course. We have to mention Sloughneil as well. And there's other outstanding dual clubs. And in actual fact, all around Loughmore, and I think it is held Loughmore Castle 90, JK Bracken's Drum, Upper Church Drum Band, Mind Temple Tui, they're all around that area there. And they have all have dual clubs now. And I think it's down to the example Loughmore Castellani have set. And JK Bracken's, they ran Clonmel Commissions very closely, and Loughmore Castellani, the hurling, very closely this year. So there's a lot of budding dual clubs coming up. And I think a happy camp is a winning camp. If you have a happy camp and players are happy, I think particularly at club level, it can be facilitated.
Okay, well, to all of the non-believers out there, including myself from time to time, Loughmore have sorted the argument. It can be done. Ken, Loughmore, they get themselves dusted down. They've Munster Club football this week coming. So even in terms of celebrations, there's not a lot they can do. And then in the hurling, in 2 weeks' time, they go now and play Ballygunner. Ballygunner had a facile enough win yesterday against the declared champions, Bellier. It just didn't fall for Bellier on the day for whatever reason. Obviously, you have to give them credit. They're playing without Tony Kelly, but Ballygunner looked impressive enough now and ran out easy winners in the finish. Ken, not sure if you saw it, but they were coming off, I think, a 10-week break as well. So that was one question going into the game. So a game under their belt now, they'll be tough opposition for Loughmore coming down the track.
Tough opposition, I'm sure. A lot more. Castellani are not contemplating that at the moment. They have a football fixture. You see, they love the sport so much, you know, and if you said to any Loughmore player, no, you can't play football next Sunday, they'll be so disappointed. They love their football so much. So they will be only gearing, TJ, towards Aroge Innes next Sunday. That's actual fact. If you meet any of the lads this week, they'll be just gearing towards the football fixture next Sunday, and they'll take one step at a time. I think Ballygunner, an outstanding team, we know that. I was down there, I gave a few courses down in Ballygunner down through the years. In actual fact, I correct me and I remain corrected. I actually think I saw a team in Ballygunner that won under 12 A, B, and C. There are three teams won the A, B, and C competitions in Waterford. That's the depth they have in the playing pool in Ballygunner. It's an absolutely huge club. So from that perspective, it's a big obstacle. They look so good, Ballygunner, on the day. They were absolutely outstanding yesterday. Ballyea without Tony Kelly, obviously, you know, and winning their own county final. But Ballygunner, for me, looked a form team going into a club championship, TJ.
Yeah, and RDF was at 8 county titles in a row, isn't it, in Waterford for Ballygunner, and you said with the underage setup, just a phenomenally strong team as well, right down the middle. Parik Manny back as well now from injury, look formidable, and I'm sure they will have their sights set on bigger goals down the road. But look, and is Loughmore at home, Ken? Is it in Turles, is it?
No, I think it's in Waterford.
I
heard after the match that it's in Walsh Park. So I mean, you have Kilmallock then and Middleton in the other side. They are going to be two right good semi-finals, lads.
They're both on the same day, yeah, and that's 2 weeks, so it's December 12th.
And the Midland and Kilmallock game has been moved out of Kilmallock, TJ, to the Gaelic grounds, which I suspect will be an advantage possibly to Midland, I would think, because they probably prefer a bigger team or a bigger field. Plus, you know, if you're playing in Kilmallock, you're going to have a huge local crowd there right on the pitch side, which can be intimidating for teams as well. The last time I was there, I saw Sars playing, and Sars were very good at the time. But Kilmallock beat him down the stretch, and the crowd had a huge part to play with it. So, you know, I don't think they'll be a hold, but they played each other in a challenge match earlier on this year and they finished the draw. There won't be a whole pile between those two teams, but it's, you know, I'm giving Midland a really good chance. I think they have improved, TJ, from the semi-final to the final. At their first half against the Glen, where they scored 16 points, 14 of them were from play. They were really, really good. Excuse me. And, you know, I suppose the big thing for Midland will be, could their lesser-known players, the likes of the Pear Whites, the Ross O'Regans, will they be able to turn up trumps again the next day? Now, I think there's definitely more in Cormac Buzang and Luke Farrell from the final. And obviously, as we know, Conor Lehan was outstanding in the day. But the fact that they've had 3 weeks from the final to the semi-final, from the county final in Cork to the semi-final in Munster, I think that'll be a big help, because they really had good celebrations there now for 3 or 4 days, and they enjoyed themselves. But I know that Ben O'Connor cracked the whip on Thursday night and said, right, lads, that's it now. But yeah, take out the hurlers and the slitters again, and they're going to give it a crack. I think they're going to give it a crack, you know, is the big thing, is the message that's coming from there. Like.
Yeah, and I think, looking at yesterday, I think both those games are planned for TG4, which is great for us to see it. I don't think Kilmallock will have any problems with the Gaelic grounds. They've plenty of games played there, and to be fair to them, I think they've been a bit of construction work going on in their pitch at home, and that's why the game has been moved. But yeah, they are the two Munster club semi-finals. And Ken, briefly, which I'm sure you'll be fully aware of the happenings, the Leinster club, there was a couple of games played, and if we go to Saturday night first, Clock Ballycolla had a very good win over the Wexford champions, Rapparees. Impressive. Peaky Mara on fire, getting man of the match. RTE again beaming the game into our homes, which is great for all those guys to get their kind of the game and just, I suppose, just to feature as kind of a top of the range game on RTE is brilliant. But a good win for Clock Ballycolla.
Yeah, Clock Ballycolla, fine team. Do you know, an absolutely fine team. The Corbys are there, Mike McAvoy, and of course, they have the cute, very cute forwards up front. Willie Dunphy, a very cute forward. Stephen Bergen. And of course, Picky, a really smart goal. You know, picked the ball in a quick flick of the wrist. And it wasn't going from that well with the freeze. But what a brilliant goal. And of course, Willie Highland, the evergreen Willie Highland in the middle of the field. I fancied Black Ballycolla all along. They beat a very good, my old team, Burris Kilcotton, in the Laois final. I think, from everybody's point of view, the Raps suffered because of this situation where they played their county final. I think it's nearly 10 weeks ago. Is it
10 weeks, I think, yeah.
10 weeks, and have been playing football since. And in fairness to any team, if you're out of action for 10 weeks, it's like starting the season all over again. And I think it's very unfair to the Raps to be in that situation. But take Clock Ballycolla, you know, an outstanding team, well managed by Declan Laffin and the lads. I think I fancied him to win it. Of course, Kilmacud Crokes had a facile victory over Raharney. I was surprised, actually, Raharney. I thought they would be putting up a bigger display. But Kilmacud Crokes, lads, have a lot of talent coming through. and they had a ropey period against Nafina in the county final. They've gained, I suppose, inspiration from that, and they will figure strongly too in the closing stages of the championship as well.
Yeah, and am I right in saying, no, Ken, that Kilmacud will face Clark Ballycolla in the semi-final? Isn't that the draw, the way it's going that side?
Yeah, and a huge incentive for both of them, because both of them want to play in Croke Park, TJ. You know, the Leinster club final is in Croke Park in December. I think the Munster clubs are not until January, but the Leinster club final is in December, the 19th. Huge incentive for both teams to play in the Leinster club final in Croke Park. Mount Leinster Rangers play Ballyhale Shamrocks next weekend. TJ got married this weekend, gone. Congrats to TJ and Eve. So, and they play next weekend, and the winners then play us in Tullamore on the 12th of December, next Sunday week.
Okay, so you'll have a keen eye on Mount Leinster Rangers versus Ballyhale. So, yeah, so good opportunity.
Without a shadow of a doubt. Mount Leinster Rangers, Kilmallock have played Mount Leinster Rangers already, and they were hugely impressed by their former Leinster club champions, lads. So they deserve absolute respect.
And it's great, Ken, like from your point of view, and Ryan's now having a go out into Leinster, opportunity knocking again, as if you guys in a semi-final draw, waiting for opposition, but great competition in fairness.
Yeah, and you know, Offaly hurling has been on a downer. Huge progress been made, you know, and Ben Ganini captaining them to win the Christie Ring, and I think it's important that we keep Offaly hurling on the map, you know, for the Laois and Offaly teams, and also of course for even the Dublin situation, you've got to keep the sport going. And it's very important now that we make a statement in the Leinster club and stand up for what we are, the champions of Offaly for the last 3 years.
Yeah, and as well, same for Mount Leinster Rangers and Carlow, a great opportunity for them to go and face the might of Ballyhale. Ballyhale, look, I suppose, and they would be entitled to be favourites at this stage for the All-Ireland club campaign. But again, opportunity knocking for all these teams. In other stuff around the country, Marco, you finished off your finals on Saturday night in Cork. You had the Premier Intermediate final.
We did. We had Castlelyons played Courcy Rovers in a TJ. Castlelyons is their second year in a row getting to the county final. And unfortunately for them, they came up short by 1 point. But that is not the story of the game. They led from flagfall, really. They led quarter one, quarter two, quarter three. 6 points up at halftime, leading 8 points to 111. They got the first 2 points of the second half to go 8 points up, and they must have felt like this is their year, that they have one hand in the cup. But in fairness to Courcy Rovers, they hung in there. They got a couple of points back. And next of all, they got a flurry. They got a savage momentum after the third quarter. They were still 4 points down going into the last quarter. But they got 5 unanswered points and managed to eke out the victory. Now, they had a couple of outstanding players. Fergus Lawton, centre-back, was outstanding. And Shane McCarthy, wing-back beside him, was a tiger. You know, one of these left-handed fellas that went into every ruck and always came out with the ball. Always did. They were outstanding at the back for them. And up front then, Jerry O'Neill got 5 points from play. I had him actually involved with the development squads at 15 and 16 and 17. Big, strong, rangy player. A Kitog again. Like Aidan Walsh, who got 5 points last weekend in the county final. Jerry got 5-3 in the first half and 2 in the second half. But a major change happened in the second half. Sean Toomey was full forward, and he would probably be their kind of go-to guy. He's been involved with the Cork Under-20s. He played Cork League last year. Got a few injuries, dislocated his shoulder last year, but he's back now fully fit. He was full forward for most of the game, but he was being marked by Cullen Barry, who played full back for him at Killy. His 3 county senior medals played, and he didn't give him a sniff all day. He went out wing forward, and he picked up a couple of balls, but crucially, they got a goal as well in the second half, and it was a long puck out that came, fell to Sean, who cut the ball, went through about 4 fellas, and offloaded to the half-back, would you believe it, Olin Crowley. So that'll tell you, we'd say, Courses were after throwing the caution to the wind, that the wing-back was up there on the end of a ball, put the ball in the back of the net, and the momentum they got was ferocious. So they finished it out 119 to 118, TJ. Castellines were crestfallen. I will say this now. Kieran McGann, who's the son of Kieran McGann, the superintendent in Cork, and our former superintendent, you'll probably see him in the security around Tullis and places like that. And John Crowley from SAS was a very successful coach. They were involved in the Castellines side. Sean Goheen, who would have been playing and would have been involved with Cork as well. And he was in charge of course, your Rovers, was also presented the week previous as being a member of the Napiershick team that won the county 25 years ago in 1996. So Sean saw plenty of action in Parky Cueve this weekend, and there was a couple of disputed sideline balls. And but it was fierce exciting, and I would say, and if you're a Corsi Rovers fan, to come from 8 points down and nip it by a point at the death. Now, Castellines had 3 chances to put the ball over the bar. Colm Spillane played up front. Castellines lost him in the first minute of the county final last year to a broken finger. He played this year, but he was out of sorts. He hasn't played a whole pile of hurling. Niall O'Leary, the Cork cornerback, played in the forward line for Castellines. Got 1 puck of the ball in the whole game. Got a goal. And Anthony Spillane up front as well. They were the main players. So look, it was a great final and great to be live streamed as well. And unfortunately, Castellines came up short, but brilliant, brilliant resolve from Corsi Rovers to get over the line.
Yeah. Ken, I see you've got to go there. First of all, thank you very much, and the best of luck in the Leinster club. We'll be keeping an eye out for you. So thanks for bringing us all things tip today and kind of the magic of Lochmore.
Hey, well, lads. Great chat, Ni.
Well done, Ken.
Okay, see you later. Marco, just myself and yourself to carry the can for Dalo again there for the last few minutes. So of course he's going on. Obviously a killer for Castellines to lose 2 finals, to try and get up senior and to lose it again. And you said in the way they lost it, so difficult. But look, as you said there, you spoke about other teams coming back. You know, I mean, nothing better to do now, you knuckle down and have another cut after.
The thing about this, TJ, is that both teams were senior a number of years ago. And both were relegated. And now courses have come back up to the senior ranks again, which, you know, I'd always feel if you're relegated, there's no argument. You know, and I think any of the two teams involved, they'll know that their standards had slipped during that period of time before they were relegated. So they found their feet again in intermediate level. It's called Premier Intermediate now. And they will go forward now into the Munster campaign. And it's brilliant for the locality, of course, your Rovers. Ballinspittle is the village and the townland down there. You might have heard of the moving statues years and years ago, TJ. I went out to see them. I'm sure on Sunday morning there was a few moving statues around the place as well. And they might have had jerseys on them from the night before. But
excellent.
I think the Munster campaign is fantastic for a club like that now.
Yeah, and in that Munster campaign, Kilmiley from Kerry had a great win the weekend. They beat the Tip champions.
That was a ferocious victory for them now, like, you know.
Yeah, great, brilliant. Great for them. So the Kerry senior champions play in intermediate. So, yeah, again, like we speak about
the Munster club. Is it Munger they play, TJ? Are they the intermediate champions in them?
Munger were good champions in Limerick, yeah, and a fine side and a very young team and a team going places as well. So, yeah, interesting championship coming for a couple of those. Couple of other things, Marco, before we wrap it up. I see the intercounty. Oh, you've got help today, have you?
I have a help for there, young Jimmy.
The intercounty.
Just home from preschool.
Oh, very good. The first round of the championships have been fixed for the weekend of the 16th, 17th of April. So we'll be coming down, Limerick coming down to Cork, and we've got Dublin Laois, Wexford Galway, Westmeath Kilkenny, Waterford Tip on that weekend. So early championship, we spoke about that already. The flip side of it is there's going to be teams out of the championship in early May, which would be unique, and that's why we always talk about 2022. A couple of other things for myself personally, I suppose, just want to send condolences to Ned Ray's family. I happened to be at the funeral. Ned, obviously iconic with Limerick in 73, passed away last week. That's where I was, basically on Thursday. So a listener of the podcast, believe it or not, so our condolences from here to the passing of Ned. And the other thing,
I met him a couple of years ago, TJ.
Yeah, gentleman, big man.
Absolutely. Yeah, had he a pub up there? Was it the 19th? Is it the 19th?
Yeah, Hargate Street, yeah.
Yeah, I went in there with Shawnee Crowley for a couple of pints. Shawnee Crowley would have been involved with development squads in Dublin for 4 or 5 years while he was there. And he says to me, can we in here? He said, we're good for 1 point here with Ned. And Ned was there and met him. He was an absolute gentleman. I'd never met him before, but you know, just a fantastic guy, I must say. And really, really stuck a chord with me when I met him.
Yeah, I always had a positive word. And in fairness, like from what I've heard over the last number of, maybe the last number of days, it certainly is an awful lot of Limerick people he helped down through the years, people trying to get on their feet in Dublin through the 80s and 90s. So, yeah, so condolences to Ned's family there. The last couple of things on the race in front, Mark, I got to see most of the races yesterday. I saw a few of them on Rewind. Honeysuckle and Rachel, off the charts.
They're unbelievable, isn't she? Yeah, 11-8 is 4-7 out to win the champion hurdle again. Like she's, and Henry said that she had on a little bit forward this year because she nearly got turned over last year and he was going to make the same mistake again. So she was very impressive. And obviously, we had a little bit of a vested interest on Saturday ourselves with Man Moral running in the fighting fifth. Glad to hear Paul Nichols declare that the horse got a cut in his leg early in the race on Saturday. So for me and my couple of associates that are involved with the half-sister, that will have a batter on Cold Foal going to the sales in Tats in January. For any punter out there who wants a Cold Foal from a half-sister, Taman Morrell, she's down here in Inchiquin Stud. And we'll see in Tats in a couple of weeks' time for her.
Yeah, and the other horse that we're following on the pod, I suppose, closely since last year, since Marco was at the sale, John Bon, and his first outing there of the season on Friday. Impressive enough, you'd have to say, Marco. So, JP.
No favour for the Juvenile Hurdling Champ in Cheltenham, am I right in saying that?
First race on the Tuesday, so one to follow as well in John Bon. One county final left, Marco. That's the Galway county final next Sunday. I will be planning to visit Salt Hill. I'd imagine that you'd want the hat and the gloves next Sunday in Salt Hill. St. Thomas's would take you on Clarence Bridge. Thomas is going for four in a row. Kenneth Burke, in fairness, him has stepped into the managerial role there and doing an excellent job. Guys playing very well. So a good final to look forward to there.
Could they potentially be a visit to Morty's on Saturday night and continue on up to Salt Hill on Sunday?
I don't know. We may need to place a call with him there during the week to see how he's going. He has been in contact and WhatsApp, and so all is good. And Dello, the message from me certainly is we need you back. See you guys.
Good stuff, PJ.
A grain of rice. A grain of rice is what you tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was the show. Then we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
To know what's really happening, subscribe to the Irish Examiner today at irishexaminer.com/subscribe.